Canto 1, Chapter 4, Text 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vyasa Uvacha. Iti Bhuvanam Samstuya. Muninam Dirga Satrinam. Vridha Kulapati Sutam. Bhavricha Shonako Bravit. On hearing Suta Goswami speak thus, Shonaka Muni, who is the elderly, learned leader of all the rishis engaged in that prolonged sacrificial ceremony, congratulated Suta Goswami by addressing him as follows. Purport. In a meeting of learned men, when there are congratulations or addresses for the speakers, the qualification of the congratulator should be as follows. He must be the leader of the house and an elderly man. He must be vastly learned also. Sri Shonaka Rishi had all these qualifications, and thus he stood up to congratulate Sri Suta Goswami when he expressed his desire to present Srimad Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from Shukadeva Goswami and also realized it personally. Personal realization does not mean that one should, out of vanity, attempt to show one's own learning by trying to surpass the previous acharya. He must have full confidence in the previous acharya, and at the same time he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the matter for the particular circumstances in a suitable manner. The original purpose of the text must be maintained. No obscure meaning should be screwed out of it, yet it should be presented in an interesting manner for the understanding of the audience. This is called realization. The leader of the assembly, Shonaka, could estimate the value of the speaker, Sri Suta Goswami, simply by his uttering yatadittam yatamati, and therefore he was very glad to congratulate him in ecstasy. No learned man should be willing to hear a person who does not represent the original acharya. So the speaker and the audience were bona fide in this meeting where Bhagavatam was being recited for the second time. That should be the standard of recitation of the Bhagavatam, so that the real purpose can be served without difficulty. Unless this situation is created, Bhagavatam recitation for extraneous purposes is useless labor, both for the speaker and for the audience. Om Vijnanate Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhaye Vicha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, in the previous chapters and chapters were the questions by the sages of Namasharanya and the answers by Suta Goswami. The last question that they asked was, now that Krishna has left the planet, where will knowledge and religion be maintained? Because when Krishna came, he came also as the Yuga avatar, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. Whenever there's a discrepancy in religious principles, Krishna comes, and he's also the personification of religion. So when Krishna leaves the planet, then there's a vacuum of spirituality and Kali Yuga begins. So the sages of Namashranya, who were performing sacrifice at the beginning of Kali Yuga, wanted to know, when Krishna left, where would knowledge and religion be maintained? And then Sutta Goswami answered that it would be the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is as brilliant as the sun. And that when that Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Prickett, he was there. And he not only was there and heard it, but he also realized it. And because he had realized it, we'll see that the sages of Namasharanya are very eager to hear from him. Because when someone has realized the subject matter, it means that he's understood it very, very deeply. Basically, there's realized knowledge and there's theoretical knowledge. Theoretical knowledge means that you understand something, but realized knowledge means that it's actually in your vision. You actually see it. I give the example sometimes where we know the Bhagavad Gita, Deheno Smin Yata Dehe Komaran Yovanam Jara Tata Dehantara Prapti Adiras Tatsinamuyate, that we're not the body. And so we theoretically understand that, but Srila Prabhupada realized it. When Prabhupada came to Vrindavan to leave his body, he quoted this verse. And when Srila Prabhupada quoted this verse, when the embodied soul passes from boyhood to childhood, to youth to old age, similarly, he takes another body at the time of death. You know, at the time of death, he just accepts another body. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Prabhupada was sober. He actually saw that. He wasn't disturbed. He actually saw that he was the spirit soul and not the body. We understand that, but if someone told us that we had a terminal disease, we would be very frightened. Because even though theoretically we understand that we're not the body, we don't actually see we're not the body. Or if someone insults us, we react. We know we're not the body, but if the body is insulted, we react. But Jada Bhart, when he was the palanquin carrier for King Rahugana, and he didn't want to step on some ants, and therefore the palanquin, because there's four people holding the palanquin started to move irregularly and began to bounce up and down, and the king became disturbed and insulted him. You're a fool, you're stupid, you're dumb. And he said, yes. Because you're seeing in terms of the body, that's what the body is. So there's difference between understanding something and seeing something. And when someone sees the philosophy, then he's able to communicate it. Because he understands it very deeply. And communicating philosophy means that you have to present it in a way that people can understand. If you just repeat words, even if it's true, it doesn't necessitate that people understand what you're speaking about. There's a difference between speaking the truth and having it understood. I give the example that if, you know, like I'm a sannyasi and I go back to see my mother and my mother says, oh, my son, my child, you know, and then she wants to kiss me on the cheek or something like that, you know. And if I say to her, you know, I'm not your son, you know, you're not my mother. You know, I'm a spirit soul. Now, I've spoken the truth, but what will she understand from that about Krishna consciousness? So you have to speak the truth, but understand what people are understanding by it. And therefore, you have to sometimes change the words of the truth, but maintain the meaning. I also give that example that one time this sannyasi, some devotees invited him. He's from another institution, but he's a Gaudiya Vaishnava sannyasi. So some of the devotees invited him to go to America. So the GVC sent some devotees to speak to him, to tell him what to say. And I happened to be one of the devotees that went. And So they said, you know, when you go, please don't say this because people will be disturbed. And what his answer was is, you know, he said, I cannot speak anything different than Prabhupada. He said, the words may be different, but the meaning has to be the same. And then finally he said, well, if you think people are disturbed, better I don't go, because a Vaishnava is one who, you know, promotes faith in Guru. If you think I'll cause it, he didn't go. But that's it. The words can be different. Of course, maybe the meaning would be different or not. That's not the point. The point is the words can be changed, and that takes deep realization. I also give the example of when Srila Prabhupada's disappearance festival, I think it's 11 days after Srila Prabhupada disappeared, and someone, a Vaishnav, leaves the world, you don't have this, you should celebrate, but you don't have the celebration immediately. There's some period of waiting. So there had to be a leader of the assembly. So the most senior Vaishnava, which is one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, was elected. This is the Vaishnav tradition, to be the leader of the assembly. It's always the system in any function in India. There must be someone who's the acharya. He must represent, he's the leader. So when he was a leader, he began to speak. Now, problem was, is that he had gone to the, he was sent to the Western countries by Bhakti Siddhanta. And really he failed. He spoke to, you know, a few aristocratic people and a few people in the Nazi party, Goebbels, and a few people. And he made like one or two devotees. But even at that time, when he came back, he was actually considered an itinerant preacher, a very respectable man. And it was devastating for him when Prabhupada went to the West and preached so successfully, especially since he was a very renowned sannyasi. And Prabhupada at the Gaudiya Math at the time was just a grihastha. So it was very shocking to them how Prabhupada was so successful. So maybe there was some envy. And he, in the assembly, he said, yes, he said, you know, Swamiji went to the West and I went to the West. He said, I could have did what he did, but I didn't have the mentality to preach to the hippies. So people were outraged, practically, that he said that, although they couldn't say anything at the time. But I saw the goddess Saraswati actually changing his words. Because goddess Saraswati, she's the goddess of learning, so she can reorder the Sanskrit declensions to make, you know, words mean other things. So just like when Krishna was assaulted by Shishupal and he was called the lowest of all men, she redivided the syllables by Sanskrit grammar to make it sound like Krishna is the man who makes everyone else seem low. So I thought that actually was a compliment. He didn't have the mentality to preach to the hippies, because what is the mentality to preach to the hippies? It's such deep realization of Krishna consciousness that you can take the highest subject matter and communicate it to those people who have no cultural reference to understand it. So that's the deep realization. The original purpose is maintained, but at the same time, no new meaning is given. So because Sutta Goswami had this clear vision and clear realization, they were very, very eager to hear from him. And that eagerness was their qualification for hearing. So as Prabhupada said, you have the perfect situation created, and unless this situation is created, then the Bhagavatam cannot be manifest. It's not different than Krishna, but this situation must be created. Just as Srila Prabhupada said, you know, when a woman and a man unite, if the man is potent, the woman is fertile, a child is produced. If either one of them is impotent, then the result will not be there. So the perfect situation has been created. And we'll go on now and we'll see Sutta Goswami's eagerness, the sage's Namasharanya's eagerness. Shaunaka uvacha Sutta Sutta Mahabhaga Padano Vadatam Vara Katam Bhagavatim Punyam Yaraha Bhagavan Chuka. Shonaka said, O Suta Goswami, you are the most fortunate and respected of all those who can speak and recite. Please relate the pious message of the Bhagavatam, which is spoken by the great and powerful sage, Sukadeva Goswami. So you only repeat in any writing. It's a defect if something is repeated twice. So similarly in Sanskrit, you don't put the same word twice. Even there's one purport in the Bhagavad Gita where Prabhupada has the same verse in the same purport. The same verse is quoted. Technically, it's a literary defect. It should have been edited out. But because Prabhupada wasn't just writing the Bhagavatam, but speaking, it just is a demonstration of his enthusiasm. So it's not a defect. So in enthusiasm, something can be repeated twice. So they have such great joy that to hear from Suta Goswami, because he's realized that they mention his name twice, and they express the fact that he's fortunate. But why is he fortunate? Because he heard from Sukadeva Goswami, and he realized it. And therefore, Prabhupada, in the purport, says they're eager to hear because of his qualifications, not that he's a professional man. When you want to make money from the Srimad Bhagavatam because people are interested in sex life, you immediately go to the 10th canto and explain Krishna and the gopis. And because the people don't have the previous qualification to understand it by going through the other chapters, what you're actually communicating to them is sex life, even though you're speaking the highest subject matter, but because they don't have the frame of reference to understand it, they just become disturbed. So he's not a professional man, but they're eager to hear from him because he's actually realized that he's not just going to speak to satisfy their senses. He's going to speak in a very realized way. Okay. Kasmin yuge pavitayam staneva kena hetuna kuta sanchodita krishna kritavam samhita muni. In what period and at what place was this first begun, and why was this taken up? From where did Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, the great sage, get the inspiration to compile this literature? So, they're eager to hear, and now they want to know about the history of the Bhagavatam speakers and hearers. So they're going to ask about Vyas, Sukadeva Goswami, and Maharaj Prickett. And the answers to those questions by Suta Goswami form the rest of the first canto, which is basically a history of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, the first question is, where did Vyas get his inspiration to compile this? This will be answered from the middle of the fourth chapter up until the beginning of the seventh chapter, where he meets Narada Muni and becomes inspired to write the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it appears to me also that they're asking these questions because they have, Vyas is their contemporary. Because Vyas was born at the end of Dwarpa Yuga, and this is right at the beginning of Kali Yuga, so they're practically contemporaries. And therefore, it's possible that they've actually heard about Vyas. It actually seems they do, because of the questions they ask indicates they know something about him. And Prabhupada also says, it is well known to them that Vyas had already explained the text of the Vedas in various ways up to the Mahabharata. So maybe they heard of him and didn't hear that he spoke the Bhagavatam yet. But they heard of him. And they wanted to know when it was taken up and where he got this inspiration. Tasya putra mahayogi samadrin nirvakalpaka ekantamatya unidro gudha mudha iveyate. His, Vyasadeva's son, was a great devotee, an equabalanced monist, whose mind was always concentrated in monism. He was transcendental to mundane activities, but being unexposed, he appeared like an ignorant person. So now they're also going to, they've heard obviously also about Sukadeva Goswami, because he had spoke the Bhagavatam. So it appears they've heard something about him. And now they're going to describe his consciousness. In other words, this is why they're eager to hear, because look at the qualification he had. Well, one thing is, he didn't want to take part in the trivial interactions of society. When someone is very advanced, then he has no interest in the social, trivial social interactions of society. Except for preaching or exchanging loving relationships with Vaishnavas. And some have so little concern, or they choose not to interact at all. So to protect themselves, like Jutta Bhart, these kind of people, they adopt different poses to repel the people. So Sukadeva Goswami actually dressed himself like a madman.
Trisvanuyantam rishim atmajam apyanagnam devyo hirya paradatur nasutasya chitram naviksha prichati munau jagadus tavasti stipum vidanu tu sutasya vivikta drishte.
While Srila Vyas was following his son, beautiful young damsels who were bathing naked covered their bodies with cloth. Although Sri Vyasadeva himself was not naked. I'll read again. While Srila Vyasadeva was following his son, beautiful young damsels who were bathing naked covered their bodies with cloth, although Sri Vyas himself was not naked. But they had not done so when his son had passed. The sage inquired about this, and the young ladies replied that his son was purified, and when looking at them made no distinction between male and female, but the sage made such distinction. She'd mentioned also in the last verse when they describe how Sukadeva Goswami acted so opposite to materialistic people. Prabhupada quoted the verse and explained it in the Bhagavad Gita, where it says what is time of awakening for the introspective sage, you know, is night for the conditioned souls, and what is night for the conditioned souls is the time of awakening for the introspective sage. There's such an opposite. There's such an opposite. I remember that too when I became a devotee. I started waking up early in college, like 7 or 8 o'clock. And I remember my old friends were just going to sleep. So I actually realized the difference. It's such a profound difference when you become a devotee. So here, to give an example of the fixedness of Sukadeva Goswami's consciousness and why they wanted to hear the Bhagavatam, which he spoke about. So it described that he was so fixed in consciousness that he didn't make any distinction on the bodily platform. Prabhupada quotes a verse, Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gabi Hashtane Shuni Chaiva Swapake Cha Pandita Samadarshana. That one who is pandit, he's sama, he's equal. Equal means he sees that everyone's body is the same, it's just matter, and everyone's soul is the same. Of course, there's a difference in how the consciousness of the soul, but fundamentally and constitutionally on the material and spiritual platform, people are actually equal. It's just their desires that are different. And therefore, there's a certain equality, just like if you see a father sees all his sons, they may, you know, he sees them all of the family. There's some kind of unity, and therefore, looking at them the same, even though one may be less intelligent, one may be more intelligent. So he was so realized. And therefore, he was so realized that even though he was a young boy, 16 years old, and all the parts of his body was developed. He was naked, and so were the ladies, but the ladies who were bathing could understand the mind of a man simply by studying his demeanor. Just looking at the child, at a child, one could understand how innocent he is, so they just saw how innocent he was. And therefore, they didn't feel embarrassed. But when Vyas came, he was a young boy who was old enough to be their grandfather. They became very embarrassed. And Prabhupada said because Vyas played the part of a householder, he was certainly on the same platform, but because he played the part of a householder, he had to make distinctions. You can't be a householder and then, you know, be Pandita Samadarshana, treat your wife equally with everyone else, your children equally with everyone else. You can't be Pandita Darshan. You have to make distinctions. Vyas was in the transcendental stage, but he was a householder, and he did not pretend to be a liberated soul as a matter of custom. So this is his consciousness. Katam alakshita purai samprapta kuru jangalam unmata mukajaravat vicharangajasavaye. How is he, Sukadev Goswami, the son of Vyas, recognized by the citizens when he entered the city of Hastinapur, now Delhi, after wandering in the provinces of Kuru and Jungala, appearing like a madman, dumb and retarded? So how is he recognized? In other words, there was an assembly of all the great sages from all over the world assembling when Maharaj Prickett was about to leave his body. They all assembled there. It was like the spiritual all-stars. And here he comes in. How is he recognized? Unmata means very mad. Mukha means foolish, like a fool. And he looked like he was mad. He looked like he was a fool. And Jadavat means like stupid, like someone is retarded. So he looked retarded, you know, like a fool and mad. So how is he recognized? And of course, Prabhupada in the purport says, one should approach a sadhu not to see him, but to hear him. He was recognized when he spoke on the subject of the Bhagavatam. He was recognized when he spoke, and this is how the sadhu is recognized. Katamva pandaveyasya raja shir muninasaha sambada samabhutata yatraisha satpati shuti. How did it so happen that King Parikshit met this great sage, making it possible for this great transcendental essence of the Vedas to be sung? The transcendental, the Shruti, Satvita Shruti. So this is spoke in the 18th and 19th chapter. We'll read later how Sukadev met Maharaj Prickett. So go dahana matrim he griheshi griha medinam avekshate mahabhagas tirti kurvans tadasama. He, Sukadeva Goswami, was accustomed to stay at the door of a householder only long enough for a cow to be milked. And he did this just to sanctify the residence. So this was Sukadeva Goswami. He was so detached that he only went to the householder for a half hour at the time of getting milk, but not to eat, but to enlighten him. So the question is, although he was so renounced that he never stayed at the householder's house for more than a half hour, then how did he spend 7 days with a king? They're interested to hear about this. He spent 7 days with a king. And Prabhupada talks in the purport because, you know, the renunciate, you know, he's not allured by the glamour of the householder's worldly possessions and thus becomes subservient to worldly men. This was the main instruction when Srila Satrup Maharaj took sannyas. What Prabhupada told him and the others, and he repeated to me when I took sannyas from Satrup Maharaj, that you should never be regretful when you go to a wealthy man's house and think, I could have had this. Or if you see a beautiful woman and say, I could have also had this. You should never be regretful. So he was completely detached. So they wanted to know this. Abhimanya sutam sutta prahur bhagavatottamam tasya janma mahascharyam karmani. It is said that Maharaj Prickett is a great first-class devotee of the Lord and that his birth and activities are all wonderful. Please tell us about him. So they were anxious to hear. Again, this is the sages of Namasharanya, their qualification. They're anxious to hear. Why? Because he's a great devotee. And because he's a great devotee, his birth and activities are all wonderful. Even in the womb, even before his birth, in the womb of his mother, he was protected by Krishna when Ashvatthama threw the Brahmastra. And therefore he's known as Parikshit or examiner, because once having seen that wonderful form, he would search for it for the rest of his life. Once you see the form of Krishna, you cannot be satisfied with anything else. And his activities were so wonderful. His kingdom, how he ruled on behalf of Krishna, and also his death, because he got previous notice, which is a wonderful thing for any mortal being. And thus he prepared himself for passing away. That's actually a wonderful thing to get notice. That's why I went back last week from here, from Gita Nagari, because one person that I had met for the first time at Rath Yatra, who had cancer, I got notice that he was leaving his body. It's a wonderful story how a person wasn't so serious by getting notice, had a jump acceleration in his spiritual life. Sasamrat kasya vaheto pandunam manavardana prayopa vishtu gangayam manadritya diratriyam. He was a great emperor and possessed all opulence of his acquired kingdom. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu dynasty. Why did he give up everything to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast until death? So Prabhupada said there was nothing undesirable in his opulence and administration. He was the emperor, so why should he give up such favorable circumstances? He was not only very opulent, but he didn't have any administrative headaches either, because he was so expert. Sometimes people have such great opulence, but to manage it, they become so distressed that you can understand them wanting to renounce it. But he was so opulent, but had nothing lacking in his administration. And they were astonished, and they wanted to hear. What was the purpose? Namantiyat paranaketam atmana shivaya haniya danani shatrava katam savira sriyamanga dustyajam yuvaishato shvastum maho sahasubi. He was such a great emperor that all his enemies would come and bow down at his feet and surrender all their wealth for their own benefit. He was full of youth and strength, and he possessed insuperable kingly opulences. Why did he want to give up everything, including his life? So there was nothing lacking in his administration. So opulent. Young man could enjoy life with power and opulence. And he was so chivalrous and so powerful, even his enemies would come down and bow down. He didn't even have any problem with enemies. They were all conquered. They were happy to come to him and surrender. Why did he give it up so that their eagerness was there? Shivaya lokasya bhavaya bhutaye yaruttama shloka parayana jana jivanti natmartama sau parasayam mamocha nirvidya kuta kalevaram. Those who are devoted to the cause of the personality of Godhead live only for the welfare, development, and happiness of others. They do not live for any selfish interests. So even though the Emperor Parikshit was free from all attachment to worldly possessions, how could he give up his mortal body, which was shelter for others? So the Prabhupada, I think he mentions it, he personally had no attachment. So you can understand him giving up his opulences, even though he's so comfortable, because he really was detached. But why did he give up his mortal body when his whole life was a shelter for others and he was doing the service of the Supreme Lord by the king? Prabhupada says interest is identical with the Supreme Lord. So he was representing Krishna's interest in this world. Why did he give it up? So they wanted to know. They were eager. And I think one reason he gave it up is because his death would be the cause of the manifestation of Krishna in this world in terms of Srimad Bhagavatam. So that service of hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam was more important than his duties in the world. That was Krishna's direction for him. Tat sarvam na samachakshra prishto yadhya kinchana manye tvam vishaye vacham snatam anyatra chandasa. We know that you are expert in the meaning of all subjects except some portions of the Vedas, and thus you can clearly explain the answers to all the questions we have just put to you. So they're saying to Sutta, you're expert in everything, but except some portion of the Vedas. But still you can explain clearly all the questions we have put to you. So Sutta was not of the highest caste and therefore not expert in all sections of the Vedas. Prabhupada makes an analogy that he was a Parivrajakacharya, not a Brahmin. So he makes, it's a difference between the Vedas and the Puranas. Basically the only difference is the Vedas begin with some mantras that require practice. You have to training to practice the metric pronunciation. See, he wasn't expert in that. But he was not less. He was not less. And in fact, because he understood the Bhagavatam, he understood the ripened fruit of the Bhagavatam. And therefore Prabhupada said, his position is not less important because he's not expert in chanting Vedic mantras with metric pronunciation, which depends more on practice than actual realization. Realization is more important than parrot-like chanting. So there's all kinds of little understandings and meanings for us. You know, it's not less important to be realized in the philosophy than to know mantras and light fires and things like this. Sutta uvacha dvapare samanu prapte jatiye yuga paryaye chita parasara yogi vasavyam kalaya hare. Sutta Goswami said, when the second millennium overlapped the third, the great sage Vyasadeva was born to Parasara in the womb of Satyavati, the daughter of Vasu. So now Sutta Goswami is going to begin answering the question of how Vyas became inspired to write the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this story will continue to the seventh chapter. So he talks about his birth when the second millennium overlapped the third. So generally it's Satya Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Kali Yuga. But in the time of Vaivasvata Manu, he's the seventh Manu. So in the seventh Manu, who lives for 1,000... No. He lives for... I can't figure out the math right now. Generally, I'm pretty good. There's 14 Manus in a day of Lord Brahma. So each Manu lives 72 millenniums. So in the 28th millennium of his life, he lives 72 millenniums. A Vaivasvata Manu, who's the seventh Manu, there's 14 Manus in a day of Lord Brahma, then Vyasa appeared. And in the 28th millennium of Vaivasvata Manu's life, Treta and Dwapara Yuga are reversed. Treta comes first, then Dwapara Yuga. In that millennium, Vyasadeva and Krishna take birth. And Vyasadeva and Krishna take birth in the Sandhya, or the last part of that millennium.
Sakadachit Saraswatya Upaspriśya Jalam Suchi Vivikta Eka Asina Udite Ravi Mandale.
Once upon a time, he, Vyasadeva, as the sun rose, took his morning ablution in the waters of the Saraswati and sat alone to concentrate. Purport. Well, anyway, this is just self-explanatory. He's now beginning to explain Vyasadeva's life, how he became inspired. So one day, after he took his bath, he began to concentrate.
Parabaragyasarishi kalena vyaktaramasa yugadharma vyaktikaram praptam bhuve yuge yuge.
The great sage Vyas saw anomalies in the duties of the millennium. This happened on the earth in different, this happens on the earth in different ages due to unseen forces in the course of time. So yuga dharma, the proper duties for the particular yuga, he saw vyatikaram, anomalies. So he was seeing in the future trikalagya. He could see past, present, and future. And he saw the past and he saw the future. And he can see the difficulties in Kali Yuga. And we mentioned that before, that just as the sages of Namashranya are making sacrifice for the benefit of others, this is the mark of a sage and what makes one a sage. So naturally, Vyasadeva was concerned for the people in Kali Yuga who became too much interested in materialism. And because of ignorance, Prabhupada says, they're unable to evaluate the assets of life and be enlightened. So he was concerned what to do.
Bhautikanam chabhavanam shaktirasam chitatkritam ashradadhanam nisatvam durmedam rasi tayusha durbargam shajanam viksha munir divyena chakshusha sarvavarnashramanam yad tadyau hittam amogadrip.
The great sage who is fully equipped in knowledge could see through his transcendental vision the deterioration of everything material due to the influence of the age. He could also see that the faithless people in general would be reduced in duration of life and would be impatient due to lack of goodness. Thus he contemplated for the welfare of men in all statuses and order of life. So he saw what is the influence of Kali Yuga, that Prabhupada says it reduces all matter to oblivion in due course. So it upsets the material situation to such a degree that you can't pursue spiritual life. We see this. The ashrams and the orders are disturbed. So we see if the material situation is disturbed, then it's hard to pursue the higher situation of spiritual. So he saw how disturbed it would be. This word is there, rasam, which means deterioration. So everything is left. Power of material objects and the purport, duration of the life, the memory is reduced, the land does not produce food grains and food, the cow does not give milk, vegetables, fruits, less, everything is less. Duration left, everything is reduced. So it has such an effect on the consciousness. I see that even these days you can't even get food. So people don't even have like nice sensual, natural sensual experiences. I remember one time in the garden of the Gurukula, I got these seeds and I planted and a papaya tree grew. And I got a fresh, sweet papaya. And I realized that I had never tasted fruit before. I was getting, you know, whatever comes to Vrindavan after it's grown someplace else and then treated and then sent to Delhi and then sent to Mathura and then sent to Vrindavan. Never. Everything is reduced. And also here, Prabhupada also says he was so concerned and he was seeing the future. And Prabhupada said, these sages, they are the real friends of the people in general, not the so-called public leaders who are unable to see what is going to happen 5 minutes ahead. And then he said, Ashradadhanam. I remember Borijan made a very nice point when I was listening. Leaders sometimes cheat. The people use it as an excuse to be independent. Faithless leads to independence and people are doomed. Vyas could see this. When leaders cheat and people lose faith in the leaders, then they do what they want. And they use it as an excuse. And therefore, acting independent of authority, naturally they fall prey to whimsy and sense gratification. Chaturahotram karma shudham brajanam viksha vaidikam vyadadad yagya santatyai vedam ekam chaturvidham. He saw that the sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas were means by which the people's occupations could be purified. And to simplify the process, he divided the one Veda into four in order to expand them among men. So now he realized what to do. People are suffering because of ignorance. Therefore, for them to be satisfied and happy, they need enlightenment. Therefore, I have to give them the Vedas. In fact, Vyasadeva is the literary incarnation of Godhead. He's Shaktivesh Avatar. He's empowered to edit as if Krishna was editing. That's what Shaktivesh means. You get a power of God to do something as if God was doing it. So he was Shaktivesh Avatar. And therefore, he had to edit. Now, his editing was very special because he had to edit not from the written form, but from the spoken form. So he first had to write it, but it was already spoken. So he had to write it, and then he had to see how to present it and communicate it. So the first thing he understood is that people weren't very, very qualified. So he saw that the sacrifice mentioned in the Vedas were means by which the people's occupations could be purified. To simplify the process, he divided the one Veda into four in order to expand them among men. So this is the first thing that you do to help people understand something. You divide it into separate parts. I give an example. It's just like a child cannot eat a whole chapati, so the mother has to break it up in little pieces and put it in his mouth. So it's the same thing with an intelligent person. He can do this by himself. So the less intelligent someone is, the more you have to take it piece by piece. So he divided the four Vedas into one. Vigyaja samatar vyakya Vedas chatvara udrita Itihasa paranam cha panchamo Veda uchite. The four divisions of the original sources of knowledge, the Vedas, were made separately. But the historical facts and authentic stories mentioned in the Puranas are called the fifth Veda. The Puranas are also the Vedas. Tatrag Veda Dharapaila Samago Jamani Kavi Vaishampayanu Evaiko Nishnato Yajasam Uta. After the Vedas were divided into four divisions, Pila Rishi became the professor of the Rig Vedas, Jaimini the professor of the Sama Vedas, and Vaishampayana alone became glorified by the Yajurvedas. So he entrusted different disciples, different scholars. He divided the Vedas and then he empowered different teachers to explain them. That also makes it specialists, experts. Artavangira samasit samantur darano muni itihasa parananam pitame romaharshana. The Samantu Muni, Angira, who is very devotedly engaged, was entrusted with the Antarbha Veda. And my father, Romaharshana, was entrusted with the Puranas and historical records. Ta'ita rishiyo vedam swam swam vyasyan nanekada shishyai prashishyas tachshishyai vedas te shakino bhavan. All these learned scholars, in their turn, rendered their entrusted Vedas unto their many disciples, grand disciples, and great grand disciples. And thus the respective branches of the followers of the Vedas came into being. So there's a whole disciplic succession of knowledge. So any knowledge is ultimately connected to the original Vedas. Prabhupada says, no one therefore can claim independent knowledge behind the Vedas. There are no branches of knowledge, either mundane or transcendental, which do not belong to the original text of the Vedas. They have simply been developed into different branches. They were originally rendered by great sages, respectable and learned. In other words, the Vedic knowledge, broken into different branches by different successions, has been distributed all over the world.
Ta eva veda durme dai daryante purushayata evam chakara bhagavan vyasa kripana vatsala.
Thus the great sage Vyas, who is very kind to the ignorant masses, edited the Vedas so they might be assimilated by less intelligent men. So he did a very wonderful thing, because Prabhupada discusses it. Generally, there are injunctions that say, unless you're a Brahmin, you can't study the Vedas. So Prabhupada said, some people argue against this. You know, and Prabhupada kind of indicates that they're right, but not right at the same time. It's not that anyone can understand the Vedas. You have to be in the mode of goodness, and that's not dependent on your birth. So there is a qualification to understanding the Vedas. But Vyasa's mercy is that he divided the Vedas in ways so that they may be practically followed by less intelligent persons in the modes of passion and ignorance. So he divided in a way that people of lower modes could understand it.
Sri Sudra Jujabandhu Nam Twaina Shuta Gochara Karma Shreyasi Mudhanam Shreya Evam Bhavediha Iti Bharata Makyanam Kripaya Muninakritam.
Out of compassion, the great sage thought it wise that this would enable men to achieve the ultimate goal of life. Thus he compiled the great historical narrations called the Mahabharata for women, laborers, and friends of the twice-born. So he was so compassionate that he compiled the Mahabharata. What the Mahabharata does is that it takes the philosophy of the Vedas and illustrates it in story form so less intelligent people can understand it. And within the Mahabharata, he puts the Bhagavad Gita, which is the essence of the Vedas. So just see that this is what saintly people do. They figure out how to communicate Vedic truth, and they present it in novel ways so people can understand it. Even people who are less intelligent. Here the word Dvija Bandhu means, we discussed this before, friends of the twice born. They're Brahmins, but they're not Brahmins. They may be born in Brahmin families, but they're not Brahmins. They're either Dvija Tatmana, which means the sons of Brahmins, or the friends of Brahmins. That doesn't make them Brahmins, because they haven't undergone the necessary samskaras or purificatory rites. And even such people can understand. He made that for them.
Evam pratityasada bhutanam shreyasi dvija sarvatmakena piyadi yada natusya dridayam tata. Evam pratityasada bhutanam shreyasi dvija sarvat makenapiyada natusha dridayam tata.
O twice born Brahmanas, still his mind was not satisfied, although he engaged himself in working for the total welfare of all people. So how was he was not satisfied. You become satisfied when you accomplish your mission or task and do your duties. It's expected that he'd be satisfied by everything that he did. He came for that purpose, and look what he's done. Still, he's not satisfied.
Nati prasiddha vidaya Saraswatyastate sachau vitarkayam bhaviktasta idam chovacha dharmavit.
Thus the sage, being dissatisfied at heart, at once began to reflect, because he knew the essence of religion, and he said within himself. Purport. The sage began to search out the cause of not being satisfied at heart. Perfection is never attained until one is satisfied at heart. The satisfaction of heart has to be searched out behind matter. So satisfaction is the symptom of righteousness. I've discussed this before in the second chapter. It's even Chanaka said that. Righteousness means to do what's correct. To do what's correct depends upon what you are. So if you act according to your nature and constitution, and therefore do your duty, then the symptom will be satisfaction. So when there's dissatisfaction, then you understand I'm not doing something right. I'm doing something wrong. The satisfaction comes from doing something wrong. So you began to wonder. And this is sincerity. What am I doing wrong? I tried to help people. What have I done wrong? So this is sincerity. And Krishna sometimes makes our despondency more prominent when it's time for us to, you know, go deeper and come closer to perfection. So this is nice. Perfection is never attained until one is satisfied at heart.
Tritabhritena himaya chandamsi gauravo gaya manita nivya likena grihitam chanu sasanam bharata vyapadeshena yamnaya tascha pradarshita tristyate yatra dharmadi sri sudradibir apyuta.
So he began to think, what have I done wrong? I have, under strict disciplinary vows, unpretentiously worshipped the Vedas, the spiritual master, and the altar of sacrifice. I have also abided by the rulings and have shown the import of disciplic succession through the explanation of the Mahabharata, by which even women, sudras, and others, friends of the twice-born, can see the path of religion. So he's trying to figure, what did he do wrong? He underwent the necessary disciplinary vows. He worshipped the spiritual master. And he compiled the Mahabharata. And Prabhupada said in this age, the Mahabharata is more essential than the original Vedas, because it's easier for people to understand the truth through the explanations of the Mahabharata. And he also made the Vedanta Sutra, which is also interesting. The Vedanta Sutra, what it does is it takes the knowledge and codifies it. He took the essence of Vedic knowledge and he codified it into aphorisms. Atato brahma jigyasa jadmadhyasayataha. So that people would could see the concept very, very succinctly and clearly, and then what they can get from there, they can expand.
Tathapi bhatta medayo yatma chai vatmana vibhu asampana ivabhati brahmavarchasya sattama.
I am feeling incomplete, though I myself am fully equipped with everything required by the Vedas. So Prabhupada says, undoubtedly, Srila Vyasa was complete in all the details of Vedic achievements. Purification of living beings submerged in matter is made possible by the prescribed activities in the Vedas, but the ultimate achievement is different. Unless it is attained, the living being, even though fully equipped, cannot be situated in transcendental normal stage. So purification, you can get purified by the Vedas, but that's not the purpose. Purification is not the only purpose unless it comes to dedication and service to Krishna. So he was fully equipped by this Vedic process of purification, but you have to come to the essence, which is Krishna consciousness. It's just like if before you eat, you wash your hands. if the food doesn't come in your hands, then you're not going to be satisfied, even though you prepared yourself. Or if you take bath and purify yourself for some purificatory rite, but don't perform it. So all the purificatory rites in the Vedas is meant to prepare you for the serving Krishna. If you don't come to that point, you won't be satisfied. So purification doesn't have a value unless it leads to perfection.
Kimva bhagavata dharma na prayena na rupata piya paramahamsanam ta eva yachuta priya.
This may be because I did not specifically point out the devotional service of the Lord, which is dear both to perfect beings and to the infallible Lord. Purport. The dissatisfaction which was being felt by Vyasadeva is expressed herein in his own words. This was felt for the normal condition of the living being in the devotional service of the Lord. Unless one is fixed in the normal condition of service, neither the living Lord nor the living being can be fully satisfied. This defect was felt by him when Narada Muni, the spiritual master, reached him. So he's sincere. So within the heart, the supersoul, the form of the intelligence, pure intelligence coming from the supersoul was giving him a hint that, and Prabhupada said, the normal condition is service. So unless you're in your normal condition, you can't be satisfied. Like the fish out of water. The fish is aquatic. It's meant to swim. If it's not in the situation of water, it won't be satisfied. We're part and parcel of God. We're made for His service. That's our normal condition. And we, no matter what we do, if we don't come to that point, we're going to be dissatisfied. Which ultimately means if we don't sufficiently chant and hear about Krishna, we're going to be dissatisfied. Because chanting and hearing about Krishna is the process which uncovers our eternal nature. So we can't actually be situated in our eternal nature unless we sufficiently chant and hear about Krishna. And therefore, Vyas, despite having done so much, remain dissatisfied.
Tasyaivam kilam atmanam manyamanasya kidita Krishnasya narado vyagad asrama pragudaritam.
As mentioned before, Narada reached the cottage of Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas on the banks of the Saraswati just as Narada was regretting his defects. His regretting his defects. The word for defects is kilam. Kilam means inferior, it means defects, it means incomplete. Later he'll be chastised. What's your problem? Darshanam kilam. Your philosophy was kilam, it was incomplete. So this was his problem. He still felt dissatisfaction because in none of his works were the transcendental activities. Of the Lord properly explained. The inspiration was infused by Sri Krishna directly in the heart of Vyas, and thus he felt the vacuum as explained above. So despondency is sometimes infused by Krishna to make us introspect and improve. When he wants us to do, in other words, he did service, but it wasn't complete. So sometimes we may do something. If it's not complete, Krishna will give us despondency so that we will push further to make it more perfect. It's definitely expressed herewith that without the transcendental loving service of the Lord, everything is in void. When I was listening to Borijan lecture on this, he said, when we are working hard and doing so many things, but don't sufficiently connect with Krishna's internal potency directly by chanting and hearing, we feel despondent. We're only satisfied when we connect with the internal potency. That's what a Mahatma is. Mahatmanastamam partha daivim prakritim ashrihata. A Mahatma is one who desires to serve Krishna and therefore attracts Krishna's internal potency, which facilitates his service. And when that internal potency, which is the Samvit Ladini Shakti, the cognitive and pleasure potency, when that flows through the heart, then the heart becomes satisfied. So unless we're chanting and hearing, we're not going to connect with that potency. That's why we feel satisfied sometimes when we're preaching, because Krishna begins to speak through us. And with Krishna speaking through us, we experience some devotion and cognizance. And when it flows through our heart, we feel some satisfaction. So unless we come to that point, we'll not be satisfied.
Tamib abhigyaya sahasa pratyutaya gatam muni pujayamasa vidhivam naradam surapujitam.
Translation. At the auspicious arrival of Sri Narada, Sri Vyas got up respectfully and worshipped him, giving him veneration equal to that given to Brahmaji, the creator. Purport. Vidhi means Brahma, the first created being. He is the original student as well as professor of the Vedas. He learned it from Sri Krishna and taught Narada first. So Narada is the second acharya in the line of the spiritual disciple succession. He is the representative of Brahma, and therefore he is respected exactly like Brahma, the father of all vidhis, regulations. Similarly, all successive disciples in the chain are also equally respected as representatives of the original spiritual master. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, fourth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Appearance of Sri Narada. Any questions? Yes.
That he sees all the anomalies of the age. Sometimes I hear people ask what our responsibility actually is, because the anomalies are something that's coming due to the time factor. And then Vyasadeva, as a solution, divides the Vedas.
Yes.
Which, if we look at now, Prabhupada's saying all the branches of knowledge that we have now come from the original Vedas, but actually they're so separated from the Vedic conclusion that what hope does anyone really have in understanding anything about, you know, devotional service from it at all? You know, like Christianity, anything. You know, it's actually by dividing the Vedas, it appears that it killed knowledge rather than facilitated it.
It didn't kill it, and it didn't facilitate it. He tried to facilitate it. He tried to facilitate it, and it didn't work. He tried to facilitate it and it didn't work. And therefore, he wrote the Bhagavatam. And therefore, the Bhagavatam is the presentation of Vedic knowledge. That's what happened. So we have the Bhagavatam and we have the Acharya who presents the Bhagavatam. So therefore, it's the message still remains live. It's almost like, by the influence of Kali Yuga, it's constantly being lost. And therefore, you have to constantly present it. And therefore, even the message of the Bhagavatam, in a way, was lost. And Prabhupada gave us access to the Bhagavatam. Because if we heard other presentations, it wouldn't have been relevant to us. Now that we've heard Srila Prabhupada speak the Bhagavatam, we may be able to understand some of the commentaries. But without him giving us access to it, we wouldn't understand it. So you always need the acharya to select and make the message relevant. Any other questions? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.